exercise in that. Okay, we're going to go on to case number five, and that is the United States versus Sean Washburn. Oh dear. Good morning, Mr. Circle.
Good morning, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, Mr. Schmidt. I have requested that 3 minutes be reserved for rebuttal.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's a few different time frames that need to be kept in mind in this case. Police officers seized a quantity of methamphetamine in Ohio about noon on November 6, 2002. Then they used a person they arrested, Dave Morgan, who is a drug dealer, to set up another control or a buy or another deal at around 7 o'clock that night.
So I'm going to start you right off. What was Mr. Washburn's status as he sat in the police car? In other words, was he under arrest? Was he being held pursuant to a Terry stop? Was he free to leave at any time?
Your Honor, if you read the transcript, Officer Snyder, I asked him that exact question. I asked him, what would happen if Sean tried to walk away? Officer Snyder stated, I would have arrested him. So by seizing his keys, placing him in the car for 2 hours and 5 minutes, before they even came back with the warrant, I argue that he was under arrest.
So it's your view that he was under arrest?
Yes, and if he would have tried to leave, they would have arrested him. In fact, the government even argued during the suppression hearing that even if they didn't find any drugs there, they could have arrested him for a conspiracy or the drugs earlier in Ohio.
Why isn't that a good argument?
That was my question. I mean, there's no doubt that he'd been involved in the Ohio aspect of things.
I think after the fact, there is no doubt, but at the time, probable cause is defined as someone with a reasonable caution would say that the criminal activity had taken place.
No, but his alleged co-conspirators in Ohio said he was going to arrive in this van that they described and at a certain place at a certain time, and lo and behold, there he was. Isn't that a pretty good basis for
probable cause? It was about 5 minutes early. They had basically a white van at a Western Inn Plaza, a white conversion van, which in Elkhart is very vague. There's a lot of white conversion vans in Elkhart County. To get probable cause, they need to determine two things, basis of knowledge for one, and two, reliability. Nothing was ever given in the suppression
hearing. But they run the check of the plates on this particular van and find that it's registered to him at his correct address.
14 minutes after they seized him at gunpoint, not before. And this is one of the major points I'm trying to make, is the police gave false testimony under oath in this hearing.
But
they
false
tried to get
is
the
a
judge.
Harsh word. I mean, it seemed to me they were more, they weren't staking their life on, you know, the 718 versus 714 versus 712. They were saying it was about these various times, and when pressed, made it clear they were estimating.
I pressed Officer Snyder about that. He even says, well, I think that I'm not sure that someone else didn't call the plate before that.
But
this is critical because if they didn't run the plate, they didn't know whose van that was.
Except that it was the exact kind of van they were told was going to come. It was the exact motel. It was not just a random place in Elkhart where there was one of these vans. It was
the evidence was that there was another white van in the parking lot at the same time as well. So it wasn't the only white van in the parking lot.
And they don't have to have 100% certainty, you know. They're not just sort of randomly going from car to car to car to van in the parking lot. They go to the kind they were told was going to be there. And they see him, you know, they get out, he gets out, he wanders back, you know.
That's correct.
It's a little strange.
They need to establish Morgan's reliability. And by being a drug dealer, they didn't do that. They didn't
say anything. Morgan's a co-conspirator. He's not just some random informant who comes up.
Well, that's the government's position, I understand. But if you look at the facts the police had, all they had was Sean Washburn, a white conversion van, coming at the Western Plaza about 7 o'clock. That's all they had.
Isn't that more than they have in most cases?
Not for probable cause. And in fact, if you look at Alabama versus White. They actually had more information in Alabama versus White. They had details about the specific vehicle. They said this vehicle has a broken taillight on the left or right-hand side, and it had exactly that. So it was far more specific in Alabama versus White. And the court says, no, that's not probable cause. That's just reasonable suspicion. You need more for that.
I'm going to take you somewhere a little different.
Sure.
Because, as I know you know, the sentencing guidelines leave little room for discretion in sentencing once a court has entered a conviction. But you've asked us to maintain Mr. Washburn's conviction and depart downward to alter his sentence from 14 years to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
How would we do this?
Because this would be new law, and that's why I'm making this argument before you now. As a former prosecutor in three jurisdictions, it never made any sense to me this all-or-nothing approach to the exclusionary rule. It seemed to be unfair and unbalanced. I would like an intermediate rule. So if you determine that he didn't have standing in Ohio when they searched Sean's suitcase, which I believe he does, you can't. You go to an airport and they search for luggage, you have standing. So you go to a basketball game or a restaurant, you have standing. Police just can't say, well, you weren't there at the time. If you determine that he doesn't have standing for the Ohio search warrant, and if you determine that Morgan was reliable enough to provide reasonable suspicion at the time that he was seized at gunpoint and thrown to the ground before they even really knew who he was, and if you determine that they had probable cause to search his van without a warrant, then I would ask that this remedy be in play.
Well, let me just say, you can raise whatever arguments you want to preserve them for the Supreme Court, but it seems to me in light of, number one, the Kuhn decision, number two, the PROTECT Act of last year, we are not that tribunal. We are not able to announce, in the face of what the Supreme Court has said about departure authority, that we've discovered this gaping new reason for departures, that the guidelines aren't there, and indeed Congress has signaled unequivocally that it is it means the guidelines restrictions on departures to be taken quite seriously, since appellate courts now have de novo review even over departures. So preserve away, but I think this is not something that is realistic for us to do.
Sure. I think the authority exists to do more than what I'm asking for. In fact, in U.S. versus Wilson, they found that the police had committed perjury in the case. And what they did is they not only vacated the sentence, but they vacated the conviction as
well. But this court does not recognize egregious government misconduct as kind of an independent theory of relief anyway.
What I'm asking is that this be a case to point out the fact of why the automobile exception is so troubling, because it allows police officers to make up facts 6 months later into the suppression that never existed before in any police report. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Schmidt.
Good morning. There are, I think, many problems with this appeal. The first one, as Your Honors has pointed out, is that there is absolutely no authority for the remedy that the appellant seeks here, a downward departure for an alleged illegal search in Elkhart, Indiana.
Let me ask you the very same question. What was Mr. Washburn's status when he was sitting in the police car? Was he under arrest?
Your Honor, I think it doesn't matter for the government's position. We win whatever his status.
Right, but I'm fascinated by that. So, help me.
Factually, I think a strong argument could be made that he was there on a voluntary basis.
Was he held pursuant to a Terry stop? What?
He was approached by officers, Your Honor. He was approached by Lieutenant Snyder. Lieutenant Snyder says, he would like to have consent to search the black bag in the van, and he believes he has probable cause to believe that there is methamphetamine in that bag. Mr. Washburn politely refused to grant that consent.
Right.
Lieutenant Snyder then said, and I quote, or paraphrase closely, would you mind waiting in the police car? Mr. Washburn said, no, I don't mind. And he then waited on a voluntary basis in the police car.
Was he free to leave?
It actually doesn't matter what was in the police officer's mind. Certainly, Lieutenant Snyder would have arrested him had he attempted to leave. But the real standard is, what did the circumstances he was presented with suggest to him? And the circumstances up to that point was that he could have left because, as Lieutenant Snyder testified, he didn't mention anything about arresting him at that point, didn't mention anything about not being free to go. So in his mind, he probably assumed that he could have left, although Lieutenant Snyder had the subjective intention to arrest him. He certainly had probable cause to arrest him, and the probable cause either to arrest him or to search the van pursuant to the automobile exception was huge. It was large. Just to cite a few things, Your Honors. Police had done surveillance that morning, so they watched the transaction earlier in the morning from Elkhart, Indiana into Ohio. Then when they stopped the caravan of cars, they then got the co-conspirators to cooperate. Not one, David Morgan, but two. Two persons separately and independently in separate interviews named Sean Washburn as the supplier of the 10 pounds of methamphetamine that went across state lines that morning. David Morgan went on. He said he had been inside the van, observing firsthand. Again, this is not an anonymous tipster. This is not a confidential informant. This is a co-conspirator saying he has personal knowledge. And he describes the van in detail. It's white. It has graphics on the side. It's a Chevy. It's a conversion van. It has wood trim on the inside. It has a black bag on the inside. Beyond the two cooperators they had in Ohio, the police had consensually monitored phone calls. The police heard the tapes immediately after the completion of the phone calls, hearing the setup of that particular deal. Then the place was changed from a Hacienda restaurant to the Westin Plaza, and right on time, the white van pulls in. It's got graphics on the side. They run the plates. It doesn't matter when they run the plates.
So you think it doesn't matter even if he was already sitting in the car when they ran the plates?
Exactly, Your Honor. They had so much PC by this point, they knew it was a white Chevy van arriving at exactly the same time, and as Judge Miller, the district court below, pointed out astutely, he just didn't drive up. He drove around looking for somebody, went inside looking out, looking for somebody. That was the testimony. And there is no testimony, and there is nothing in the record about a second white van being in the parking lot.
What's your response to Mr. Washburn's allegation that the government refused to turn over the Ohio warrant?
Your Honor, it's a complete red herring. First of all, the defendant didn't file any discovery motions, and in any event, the defendant got the warrant on the day of the suppression hearing. So, in any event, he has no standing, hasn't even come close to establishing standing with respect to the earlier morning's events. He wasn't riding in the cars that went into Ohio, didn't have an ownership interest in the cars that are riding in Ohio, couldn't possibly have had a recognizable privacy interest in the actual drugs themselves. We know from Wyoming versus Houghton that you can't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the drugs themselves. And he hangs his hat on the fact that the suitcase in which the drugs were carried came out of his van. Let me note, Your Honor, there is nothing in the record that demonstrates that that suitcase was owned by Sean Washburn. The only testimony during the suppression hearing, the evidentiary hearing in this case, with respect to that suitcase was it simply was provided by Sean Washburn and came out of the van. So then we're to think that the container holding the drugs gives someone standing wherever it goes, despite the fact that Mr. Washburn and all the evidence at the suppression hearing showed that he distributed the drugs to David Morgan and Thomas Wright, and then they went across state lines. It's simply not credible and not consistent with the case law to suggest that he has any kind of standing whatsoever with respect to the Ohio search warrant. So I think that's a complete red herring. Your Honor, there were no police misrepresentations or misconduct. Lieutenant Snyder testified very cautiously and very carefully at the hearing. He testified that he believed that Washburn was stopped around 7 p.m. Didn't give an exact time because he didn't know an exact time. When pressed on cross-examination, he said, "I'm not exactly sure of the time. I'm not even sure if it was before 8 p.m. It could have been longer than that." And Judge Miller made his factual findings, which are entitled to a clearly erroneous review by this court, and credibility determinations with respect to Lieutenant Snyder and the other two government witnesses, which this court gives near absolute deference to. The judge didn't find any inkling of misrepresentations by the police, perjury by the police, and as Your Honor pointed out, in any event, even if the defense had shown such misconduct by a police officer in his testimony, that would not be an independent ground on which to suppress. So there really is, in the government's mind, no basis, Your Honor, to overturn the district court's careful decision based on the automobile exception. The request by the appellant to overturn the automobile exception is one that this court's not able to do, just like it can't fashion a remedy out of thin air with respect to downward departures. This court is not free to simply overturn Supreme Court, well-established Supreme Court decisions with respect to the automobile exceptions. Cars are still readily mobile, no further exigencies are required, and there is a reduced expectation of privacy in automobiles. You can see into them, they travel on the road, they get into accidents, etc. There's absolutely no reason to change the automobile exception. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt. 2 minutes.
This court doesn't have to overrule the automobile exception because Coolidge is still good law. The plurality decision in Coolidge versus New Hampshire 1971 says that if it's practical to get a warrant, it should get a warrant. And in fact, the government can't say that it's impractical in this case because they got a warrant 2 hours and 5 minutes into the case. It's page 200 in the transcript where Ms. Cannon says that there was another white van in the parking lot at the time. This was not the only white van in the parking lot. The government talks about Hacienda Restaurant. If you read the transcripts of the phone conversation, Sean Washburn never says anything about Hacienda. They never agreed to meet there. That was just Morgan saying where he was. Wood trim never came up anywhere until the suppression hearing. It says possible wood trim. That sounds like it's on the outside. In fact, the first police officer testified it was on the outside. It wasn't until later on that they said it was on the inside. The affidavit said that Morgan told him it was in a black trash bag. But after the search, they said, well, it was in a duffel bag. Officer Snyder said, well, I read the search warrant, and he didn't apparently notice the trash bag difference. I think this case, if you look at the fact that these two major issues of saying that the dog was there within a half an hour and not an hour and 25 minutes is very significant because it takes from probable cause to reasonable suspicion. Saying that you ran a license plate before you see somebody at gunpoint is significant. And they actually did it 14 minutes later. These are two major issues that we never would have been able to...
Did you take issue with the proposition that the officer asked him after he denies consent, which everybody agrees he denies consent to search the vehicle, that the officer simply asked him to sit down in the police car?
The case law says over and over that mere...
Well, but you're saying he's arrested at gunpoint, you know, and dragged into the back of the car, and your opponent is portraying a conversation in which he says, would you sit down there? And I want to know, is this a point of disagreement between the two of you on the facts of this record?
Yes.
Okay.
Mere acquiescence to police authority is not consent.
But you're still not answering the question. But is it your view that it is a question of how to characterize his agreement to sit down, or is it your view that somebody's waving a gun in his face when they ask him to sit down?
Oh, no. They threw him to the ground at gunpoint. After that, I don't think he had a gun pointed at him.
When did they ask him to sit down?
After
they tossed him on the ground?
Yes. Okay. He wasn't forced in the back of the car.
That's like a Terry search, right?
I think it would probably go beyond a Terry search when you have multiple guns thrown at you and thrown to the ground.
Wait a minute, where is the there are now multiple guns?
Yes, multiple guns, Your Honor. And in fact, they threw him down between... Here's another inconsistency. They said they threw him down spread eagle between two vehicles, but then they said there's two vehicles parked close together. That's another inconsistency of the 15 or 20 or 25.
Well, it depends
probably
how they're parked, right? If they're fender to... front.
Well, they testified that they were right next to each other, parallel. And I think that was to get him closer to the driver's door of the van. But then they said they had a spread eagle, which is not consistent with two vehicles parked next to each other. But there's several inconsistencies.
If they're both in front of the front, I mean, if he's in front of the two fronts,
Well, they wanted to place him right next to that door, right ready to stick his key in the door. That's what the police wanted, where they wanted to place him.
Okay.
So my point is, when you have multiple material false statements, and we prove beyond any doubt with their business records, with their own business records, which I don't think very many attorneys would even have known how to get. We have multiple material false statements that goes beyond negligence, and the court should fashion a remedy. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Zirkle, and thank you, Mr. Schmidt, and the case will be taken under advisement.